102.5 KZOK, good morning. When is the real thing still the real thing, but sort of not the real thing, and you shouldn't have it? You know what the real thing is, right?
Coke, right? Coca-Cola?
Coke is the real thing. Okay. That's embedded in our brains. That song, I'd like to teach the world to sing. How many products have actually had a number one hit song out of the commercial for the product? That's another trivia question.
Coke? Ketchup?
Ketchup.
Anticipation?
Ketchup.
Anticipation.
Was a hit song before they bought it for
no,
ketchup.
No, that's not the same.
Yeah, that Cadillac with that rock and roll song. That
Led Zeppelin
band.
Rock and roll, yeah.
Hey, boy, that Cadillac commercial.
So that...
Now, I'm talking as the song was... Well, maybe I am wrong. Was I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing a Coke commercial first?
I think you're right. I think that was actually that Coke commercial with all the people standing in the field making.
That was back when they would manufacture huge artists. No. They would say, "Let's call them the Monkees, and we'll get a bunch of faces, and we'll just create this band in the studio."
Didn't
right?
Barry Manilow write that for Coke
as a jingle? And it was a jingle first, and then it was released as a song.
Uh-huh.
I think you're right.
I mean, you know, nothing else, as far as I know, made it to number one initially as an advertisement. You know, who can turn the world on with her smile? Never. I've never heard of that on the radio, and I'm glad.
Well, there have been a couple of TV theme songs that made hit
Friends.
Records.
Shaft, theme from
well,
Shaft.
Yeah, well, that was from a movie, but the Friends, I'll Be There for You, the
yeah.
Rembrandts had a hit
I'll
with that.
I'll Be There for You. How big did it do in the... Beat bopper chart.
It did well.
I think the single went number one right away, and then nobody ever wanted to hear it again.
We're going to do it our way. The Laverne and Shirley theme was actually released as a radio single in its day.
Yeah.
You know, Happy Days, that
Happy
one.
Happy Days.
Yep,
yeah.
Was released
right.
as a radio
single.
So there's
single. Been a lot of television shows. Any other advertisers? Last call.
TV theme song, not doesn't count.
Yeah, we're on to advertisers. Commercials that turned into hit records.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
Yeah, I remember that. I saw that live. Man, that solo.
Cameron in Tacoma.
Hey, Bob. I collect Coca-Cola memorabilia, and I have 245s. And the song is done by two different people. One's the New Seekers, and the other one was the Hillside Singers. And I believe the New Seekers did it first, and it was a hit before Coke actually used it in the commercial.
I'm checking on that. It was clearly a bigger hit after Coke used it in the commercial. Thanks. Eric?
Yeah, the research I'm finding is that the Seekers actually did it first. So sort of like the Carly Simon anticipation thing with the ketchup.
But, did the New Seekers have a hit?
No.
Because the anticipation was a hit record.
Didn't you see the New Seekers reunion tour last summer at the Puyallup Fair? They're still hot.
The old Seekers.
And they didn't sing It's the Real Thing, Coke is, right? They just, I'd like to teach the world to sing part, and then Coke added the rest.
Exactly. So here's the deal about the real thing, Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is the real thing still. Coca-Cola is made all over the world. It's the number one soft drink. Is it still the number one soft drink in the world? I think so.
It is.
Yeah. Pepsi has a slight lead in some areas. Pepsi is a very close number two. They're really kind of neck and neck.
Mm-hmm. Pepsi has a lead in market cap, I think, right now. They're a bigger brand stock value-wise.
And Pepsi owns other things, don't they? Own Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they own the stuff that washes that Coke washes down. Other bad food. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. You would think that Coca-Cola would be the same everywhere in the world.
Ooh, no.
But it's not.
What? They change it?
Well,
different strokes for different folks.
They license it. They license the brand to different factories all over the world.
Well, go to Disney. If you go to Disney World, we just did it the holidays, there's an exhibit there. That's sponsored by Coca-Cola. Most of the stuff at Disney is sponsored by somebody. And you can taste Coca-Cola from around the world, the different recipes that different parts of the world enjoy, because just their tastes are different. They're used to different things. There's a Coca-Cola from Russia that's got a little more of a bitter taste to it. There's a Coca-Cola from the Middle East that's got sand in it or something.
I think he's totally winging it.
No, I'm not.
You have no idea what you're talking
about. I've
heard you do this before. You have no research behind this at all.
How much you give me?
How much I give you?
How much you give me if I'm not making this up? What do you give me? That's very easy.
If you're right about this?
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there.
Been where?
I've been in the Coca-Cola exhibit. It's shaped like an iceberg. It's cold inside. They have several different machines and tons of free little cups. Oh. And you can sample different Coca-Cola recipes from around the world.
If you've been there, I might not bet you.
I've been there.
Disney World, you were just there.
I was just there.
All right. Okay. So Mexican Coke is being smuggled into the U.S. This has got to have the DEA confused, right? Can you just picture the DEA gets the wrong idea about that?
Okay, pull the truck over. Open the doors. We were told there was Coke on board.
12 ounces of Mexican Coke.
The street value of 37 cents.
Actually, $1.25. It's pretty exciting.
Meanwhile, Ahmed and his shoulder missiles are driving through. Are driving
the
through.
Hills are alive with the sound of jihad.
So, yes, it is actually, it's turning into a big deal. And what is the difference between Mexican Coke and U.S. Coke?
There's actually two very
mule
big...
sweat? I don't know.
Is there a worm at the bottom? I don't know.
There are two big differences.
There are. The one big difference I do know about is something that... Well, first off, I don't drink sugar drinks anymore anyway.
Right.
I think they're wonderful when you're a kid, you reach a certain age. I'm a Dasani customer. I'll drink the bottled water, Dasani, Aquafina, and I think I'm no longer drinking soda, but yet those guys are still getting my money.
Yeah, they are.
And I think they're happy about that. Yep. In fact, I think they make more money on the water because, hey, here's a great idea. Let's charge just as much, and there are no ingredients.
You don't see
none.
Brilliant!
You don't see anybody smuggling Mexican water over the border.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. No.
That's why it's yellow.
Plus, you could see the worm more clearly in the water. God. Yeah. So, here's the big difference. And it's an interesting difference, and it relates to something I've talked about a bunch. I think there's a product I think is related hugely to obesity in America that I tell you about all the time, and I've read, you can Google it and read for yourself and decide if you think I'm full of it or not, but U.S. Coke has something that's in all of our foods, and Americans love it, high fructose corn syrup.
That's the sweetening agent in U.S. Coke?
That's the sweetening agent in U.S. Coke, okay. And it's a sweetening agent in U.S. soap,
everything.
In U.S. car wash. high fructose corn syrup is like
it's
like MSG used to be in Chinese restaurants. Okay. It's in everything because, right. And the reason it's in everything is because when they do these taste tests, if you put it in it and then you don't put it in it and people sample, they go, I want that one. I want that one right there.
Right.
That one tastes better because it just tastes better to us.
Right.
Well, there's two other reasons as well. The first reason being that high fructose corn syrup is actually cheaper than sugar.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, it's cheaper to produce, so it's more economical for the companies. Second thing is that when you are taking a taste test, you are more drawn to the sweeter drink. So you're going to pick the one that tastes right. Sweeter to you.
And the Mexican Coke has cane sugar.
Just good old sugar.
It's still bad, Joe. Sugar is just bad anyway. Cane sugar is just,
Why is Mexican Coke made more expensively? I mean, why are they using, if fructose sugar tastes sweeter and it's cheaper to make, why aren't they on board with a smart way to do business?
It's made with cane sugar, and it's also more expensively, but a lot nicer, put in glass bottles still in Mexico.
Oh, I love the glass.
So people are, when they go to Mexico and they're getting their prescription drugs and they're watching the donkey do things
right.
With a woman in a ping pong ball that you thought were not possible.
I didn't think a donkey could play ping pong, but it's just amazing.
They also are buying cases of this illegal Coke and smuggling it. Is it illegal? Coke has condemned the smuggling of this, but I'm not sure if it's exactly illegal, is it?
Well, they say it's not exactly illegal because it's not counterfeit. If this were some kind of counterfeit product, that would be a different story, but it's Mexican Coke.
It's just a little Mexican souvenir.
Now, I don't think you can be licensed to resell, and that's what's happening in a lot of these Mexican grocery stores and stuff. They're selling this Coke, and that's kind of black market because I'm sure there's licensing and trade agreements in this country that you buy your Coca-Cola from the good folks in Atlanta.
United States bottlers complain about unauthorized Mexican Coke being sold in their territory, Coke investigates. Mark Martin, a Coke spokesman, says the company has successfully filed lawsuits over Mexican Coke in the past. It's a little bit like prescription medications from your country, from Canada, right? Because they'll take a prescription medication here, usually it's the exact same medicine, but they'll sell it cheaper in Canada,
right?
Forcing all of these elderly people on the road, which is a huge hazard.
Hopefully they're going by bus.
Oh, Magoo, and they're on their way up to Vancouver.
They're going to get some pills.
Coke is sending lawyers after people.
Federales.
Says Danny Ginsberg, founder of Real Soda in Real Bottles, a Los Angeles company that sells hard-to-find soft drinks.
You know, I've seen a lot of, I don't want to say Mexican, but Hispanic delis and grocery stores, even up here in the Northwest, that cater to immigrants to this country, that cater from people from Mexico or whatever country. And that's what they're used to. That's what they grew up on. You know, why you can sell them Mexican food. I mean, I know there's a great American tamale company.
Right, so they can go to a little ethnic grocery store.
Right, exactly, and get exactly what they're used to having when they grew up with. Why shouldn't you be able to go buy a bottle of Coke made in Mexico if that's how you grew up?
Jacob, hello.
Hey, I was just calling because you don't have to go to Mexico to get good Coca-Cola. I was at work one day, and my friend handed me a Dr. Pepper, which is made by Pepsi. But my friend handed me a Dr. Pepper. He said, open this and drink it. And so I tasted it, and it was really sweet. Yeah, I differ. I think that the ones with corn syrup aren't as sweet as the ones with real sugar. But I tasted it, and it's really good. I said, whoa, did they change it or something? He said, no. I got this out of a pop machine up in Canada. I tasted it, and I read the ingredients, and it had real sugar.
So does Canada also have a cane sugar formulation?
It doesn't say cane sugar on the can. I know it tastes better, and it's made of real sugar instead of corn syrup. So I don't know. I'd like to taste the Mexican and see if that tastes any different. But last time I went up to Canada, I brought home 5 cases of soda pop. I brought home like 2 cases of Coke and I brought home some Dr. Pepper and some root beer and everything. It all tastes better up there.
And your lap dance is economical, and you only have to be 19. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Here's John. John, go ahead.
Yes. I have 2 comments. One is about Japanese Coke. I found it a lot sweeter and creamier because it doesn't have as much carbonation, in my opinion. But it tasted a lot sweeter and creamier, and I really enjoyed it. It was really thick. And the other comment is about theme songs. Bob the Builder's theme song went to number 1 in the Euro Songfest. And it was really popular. I don't know if you know about the Euro Songfest, but it was.
I don't even know about Bob the Builder.
Bob the Builder, can we build it? Bob
really?
Bob the Builder, yes we can.
Yeah. I don't know about the Euro Songfest, though. What is that?
It's this huge song festival, like all the countries in Europe and a few in the Middle East, including Israel and Cyprus and stuff. And they put out at least one singing group or a singer from each country in Europe, and they had this huge music festival, kind of like American Idol or something like that. And then
Bob the Builder won.
Did Bob the Builder won that?
Wow.
It was packed when I saw him.
He's slim pickings that year.
I saw him at the Tacoma Dome a couple years ago.
Thank you, John. Here's John in Seattle. John?
Yeah, I'm calling to defend Spike on the Coke. I was in Egypt about 3 months ago, and if you could find Coke, like if you're in Cairo or Luxor, you could find Coke easily. But other than that, you couldn't find it at all. But when you could find it, it was really sweet and really thick.
Different recipes for different parts of the world.
Exactly.
If anyone listening has Coke from different places around the world, give us a call. We'll have a little taste test tomorrow.
I'm
curious.
Jonesing for a little Mexican Coke after hearing how good it is. Yeah. I'd really like to try some.
Jones is a different soda.
Yeah, that's local, by the way.
You ever Jones for Jones?
Ah, everything but the turkey and gravy. I got no interest in getting meat out of my soda.
Are you a Christian, Jewish, or Muslim? Maybe you're agnostic. Maybe you're atheist. maybe none of these labels fit you. Maybe you're one of the millions of people who really don't know what they believe. If that's the case, you might want to consider converting to Universism. Ford Vox is a 28-year-old Alabama man who is the founder of his own religion. Universists number in the thousands nationwide and are only required to acknowledge one common belief: uncertainty. Vox and his congregation worship simply by wondering how we got here, why, and what lies ahead. They don't claim to know anything. I don't think there's an offering plate involved. I wonder how they keep the keep the lights on in the church. Ford Vox, it's very rare we get to speak to the head of a church, granted, a small one, but the founder of a religion is on the phone with us this morning. Ford, good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Is Ford, as a first name, a common first name?
No, I don't believe it is. I've met a few Fords in my life. It's like a family last name.
All right. Ford, you're young. You're only 28 years old, and you founded a religion which seems to have thousands of followers. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, it's just due to my own life experience and sort of the education I've received and my background growing up in a very conservative cultural climate there in Alabama. And basically, it has a lot to do with struggles I've had in my own life. But the big idea here is that as a founder, I'm not some like great visionary or guru that's come up with some new vision for understanding the universe. In fact, what we've simply done is realize that there are already millions of people who think a certain way, and that's never really been acknowledged in religion before. We feel like religion has been divided up falsely between yes and no. You can either be secular and atheist, or you can join into various gradations of this concept of faith, you know, ranging from fundamentalist Islam all the way down to like the most liberal, open, accepting, Unitarian Universalist church with a lesbian minister, which is certainly my favorite kind.
I like him now.
He's 28 years old, obviously.
Yes, sir.
Ford, what you're describing to me, I guess I've always called that agnostic, not really sure. Isn't that pretty close to what that is?
The agnostic position is technically just about the God question, and it admits that you can't know. Ours is slightly different. It's that the individual may know, and it's about validating individual experience. And so the big intellectual boo-boo here is that it is postmodern and it's relativist, and this is why it's not something you've seen come out of like academic philosophy, and of course is equally derided by by theologians. But nevertheless, it's a philosophy that we've seen is shared by at this point over tens of thousands in the United States, and we believe as more people become aware of it, it will ultimately be millions. We think it's going to be the next major religious movement in the 21st century.
I love the phrase intellectual boo-boo. It's like Yogi's friend if he were really smart.
Yeah.
Hey, Ford, what are you offering? And when I say, you know, the Catholic Church offers me a sense of reassurance, a sense of belief. Maybe the Muslim faith offers a sense of eternal paradise at the end of the road there. What is Universism? What's your catch?
Well, it's interesting. You know, people do talk a lot about the comfort that they receive from their faith, and certainly Catholicism has a lot to offer in terms of explaining the universe. But a lot of people are increasingly, as we've seen, are falling away from Catholicism and other religions. And we certainly, in the Universalist movement, don't have to do anything to continue to make that happen. It's happening naturally. And you have to wonder why it does happen a lot, because people see incongruities between the religious texts and what their ministers and what their religious leaders are telling them and the daily life that they lead. They see moral complexity in their lives, and these themes are reflected in even our popular culture, in the novels we read and the songs we hear. We understand how people look at life in different ways, and that fundamental idea is entirely disagreed with when you talk about faith and absolutes. So, but what Universism offers, we believe, is what people are really getting out of their religion, which is the idea of community around these big concepts. And you can still do that without having the community adhere to absolute dogmas.
So, in other words, you offer the same sense of community as other religions without any of the commitment to intangibles that can't be proven.
Right, and it's not, and there is that aspect, and it's the idea that we believe it benefits people personally as individuals, as well, in the sense that you can sort of lead a more engaged and fuller life because you're willing to, when you wake up each morning, find out something new, meet someone new who can shake the foundations of what you understand about the world on the most fundamental level. You're no longer going through each day wearing a coat of armor and a particular shade of sunglasses trying to protect your worldview. Instead, you're open, and we think in general this is going to, you know, make our society also a, you know, a kinder, gentler place.
Where do you stand on where do you stand on greed and lust? They're two of my big favorite things
greed
in life.
Greed and lust. Greed How do you feel about those? Yeah.
Right. Greed and lust. Well, this is in Universalism, the idea of morality is somewhat eschewed in favor of ethics. And our ethics are very much derived from the principles of Universalism, which start off with the primacy of this idea called the search. And we value everyone's ability to engage in that. So,
oh, you do. So it was. Hold on. All I heard was engage, service. Hold on. Slow down, please, with the big words. He's 28. This is amazing. He's got that whole put-you-to-sleep thing going. Slow down just a little bit. So,
sure.
Do you have any simple rules, like you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to wear this?
Commandments.
Do you have any commandments or things
yeah,
like
that? Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know.
You got to make them simple, too. They have to fit on one stone tablet.
Like, do no harm would certainly be integral to being able to be a universalist. We can't prevent other people from engaging in their own spiritual path, and what we define as a spiritual path has to do with your engaging in the natural world around you in everyday life. So we try not to controvert each other's will as much as possible, and that has big implications for what law should be based on as well.
Okay.
We feel that one of the major, besides this community aspect, what we feel it can do for people as individuals, we also, it's very much a social activism thing, and that we feel that there are major ideas and themes in religion that have sort of infected our system of government and our society in general. Among them, these concepts.
Hold on. Do you also feel that every sentence has to be a week long?
I did write.
Yeah. We want to ask some questions.
He sure is excited.
We need some soundbite answers here. Casey, go ahead.
What kind of heaven are you offering?
Well, it's heaven on earth, really.
That's
and we feel that the concept of heaven after life has really diverted people's attention from making life here on earth better.
Right.
And we feel there can be hell on earth and heaven on earth, and we sort of discuss the ways that might be, but certainly a universalist hell on earth would be a situation in which, you know, the right way, there was a good life that society universally understood and people were looked down upon who didn't live that way.
Right.
Okay, your time is up, Ford.
We're going to treat this like a presidential debate.
Next question. Go ahead.
How do you feel about sloth and drunkenness? You know, I'm a Christian, but sometimes I get a little bit of a conflict of interest going there.
Right. Well, I found that some of the better universalist meetings do occur over rounds of beer, so
nice.
I can definitely advocate the occasional imbibing, and I've been a bartender before, so.
All right. Yes, go ahead, Mike.
Ford, what would be a selling point for universalism for someone of my religion, the Force?
The Force.
Yeah.
Well, right. The Force the Force is the great Jedi religion. Yes. Well,
they're very similar,
the Force,
I think.
Unfortunately, is kind of nerdy, don't you think?
Oh, so you're saying all are not welcome at your whatever.
Yeah.
Universe far, far away
is not an all are welcome thing. I mean, that's part of the gradations of faith that we have. You see that if you want all are welcome, there's the Baha'i high faith, there's Unitarian Universalism.
Right, they got
this is skepticism as well. So it is critical and skeptical of certain paths, namely these ideas of revering certain constant truths that we try to pass on from generation to generation. Instead, we want...
Well, there's the bell, Ford. Hold on. There's the bell.
All right, go ahead, Eric.
Ford, I have a question about something you said. You mentioned that your religion, Universalism, was about social activism and getting involved in government, but I thought there's a separation of church and state. Are you worried about your religion being taxed by the government at some point?
Well, and the extent that all religions would be taxed by government in terms of the fact that religion fundamentally underlies our political ideas, if that's what we decide as a society, then yes, universalism should be taxed as well. But that is an essential point. We feel that you cannot divorce politics from religion, and that's part of the problem with political debate today. We try to pretend that religion doesn't underlie every single issue. That's why abortion is such a controversy. You know, that's why end-of-life issues are such a controversy. That's why, you know, Samuel Alito is having, we're having such a controversy over these election and choosing of these particular justices.
All right, next up, Joe.
All great religions, Ford, have a symbol. You've got your cross. You've got your Star of David. Does universalism have a symbol yet?
Yes, we do. And it's basically a stylized form of a galaxy.
Ooh. I've seen it. It's a ball with a couple of spinning lines off of it, right?
Precisely.
Are you concerned about its similarity to the hurricane symbol that we have on the
yeah.
southeast this year?
It's sort of the hurricane symbol for shaking up traditional religion.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So very there was no accident.
So it's actually that's actually okay. A double meaning. All right, and we are running out of time for it, but. What about money? Religions cost money. A religion is almost like a political campaign, and there is a dark side of it, and that is the money that must be raised. And of course, as far as I know, you just want to build an amusement park. I'm sure you probably don't, but or maybe you want to get your own cable channel. What are your intents there? Do you intend to do, as many religions do, good works? Do you intend to create charitable organizations and help children in third world countries, or what? Do you want to put a jumbotron in your church?
We are going to engage in charitable activities. We've already built a charitable fund called Hands on Humanity, and our LA group is going to be focused on volunteerism there. And individual groups will take on their own character, but certainly one of our major goals is to raise enough money to buy up all the old Catholic churches. They're now empty.
And Ford, we kid a little because we're a comedy show and all, but you are extremely well-spoken. I grant you that, and you are never at a loss for words. Are you the undisputed leader? Are you the Pope of this church? Or are you going to turn this over to someone else and go quietly at some point?
It definitely would not succeed. Every new movement that's ever been started has always failed because the founder gets too big of a head and it also becomes too much attached with that particular person. And we're certainly developing other leaders, and there's already another president. His name is Todd Stricker, and our group is now based in Chicago. And so certainly that's quite important to me as well. I want to see it succeed and certainly not fail because it's too identifying.
But 1,000 years from now, you want people having a little statue of you and burning
bobblehead on the dashboard, yeah.
No, that would actually be, that wouldn't make sense in terms of the philosophy. And the idea here is that, you know, my only authority comes from that I'm the guy who started it first. But everyone who's in this understands it just as well as I do. All we're doing is bringing together people who really already think this way. I haven't taught anybody anything new.
That's right. And interesting. Ford Vox in Columbus, Ohio, the founder of Universalism. You're not celibate or anything like that either, are you? You don't think that?
No, quite the converse.
Yeah. There you go.
Quite the converse. Thank you, Ford. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Chinese cars went on sale yesterday.
Go on sale. They showed them off.
They
debuted to the American buying public.
Oh, well, that's
okay. You got to hype. You got to hype something new.
Joe thinks it looks like a Mercedes.
It looks mighty nice for the prices they're quoting on these things. Does that look like a $10,000 car to you?
That's $10,000?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Holy cow. That looks a good-looking car.
Don't say cow.
Uh-oh. Wow, that's a fine-looking vehicle.
Well, no, that's the Indians with the cows, right? Never mind. Never. The Chinese eat cow.
They eat lots of cow.
Okay. It's the Geely or is it Geely? Is that how you pronounce it?
Well, the Chery is what it's called in China, but they're going to have to rename it because it sounds too much like Chevy. And Chevrolet. Oh.
Chery.
Exactly.
No Chery.
No Chery. And Chevrolet owns the, you know, obviously
the sound of that
trademark. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's called the Geely.
I think that's what they're going to be calling it, something like that.
Well, that doesn't sound all that.
That's not a great name.
It's a Geely. But for $10,000, I don't care what it sounds like. Did you see this car? This would be a nice car for a young lady if her parents hadn't already bought her an Audi.
I bought that myself.
I know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But
if we say it enough, people start to believe it.
I know
true.
They do, and then I get emails about how spoiled I am. Thanks.
Are you getting a new car anytime soon?
Oh, God, no. First of all, I bought this car used. Second of all, I'm going to keep it as long as I can, but I'd love to get a hybrid someday.
It embarrasses her to be in a fancy car.
I'm extremely embarrassed. The minute I purchased it, I thought, I don't know a lot about cars. I did not see this as a luxury car. I saw it as an upgrade from what I was driving because it has four-wheel drive and room for my skis. And so I thought, well, this is a great upgrade, and I got a great deal on it. My payments were lower. And then everybody's like, oh, fancy pants. How'd you get the money for that?
Let me ask you this. Does your butt sit in leather or cloth?
Leather.
That's a luxury car.
It is a luxury car.
That's the threshold.
What it is your friends were jealous.
But I don't want anyone to be jealous because I paid for it myself, and I'm making payments myself, and I had a car before that I paid off and then traded in for it.
Right.
And
in other words, I think she mostly objects to the fact that her friends think that sugar daddy or actual real daddy got it for her, that she couldn't possibly get that on her own.
Or that I purchased it for the reason of it being a certain kind of car. I purchased it because of the car that I had before. It had a great trade-in value on it, and it was a great upgrade for me.
You didn't even know Audi was kind of a
No, I had no idea. I just thought it was slightly an upgrade from Volkswagen. What's the big deal?
And Audi and Volkswagen are the same company.
Yeah, they're made on the same... The car that I have is made on the same at the same plant as the car that I drove before. So it's basically the same, only slightly
That's
more
funny.
Safe.
I'm almost the same way. I don't want to drive a fancy... I love them, though. I mean, I've had great fancy name cars. How would you feel about driving a Geely, a $10,000 Chinese car that feels and looks a little bit like a Mercedes on the showroom floor? Now, granted, I've not sat in it. Maybe it's only 6 inches tall, for all I know.
I need to do a walk around. I need to kick the tires.
Yeah. Where is this? Where was the?
This was at the Detroit Auto Show. They are selling right now franchises all over the country. Basically, the territories are being divided up,
gobbled up,
and gobbled up quickly. These will be hitting the streets all over America in a little less than 2 years.
Chinese automaker Geely. Is it Geely or Geely?
Probably Geely. From China, I would think. Geely would be a more European pronunciation of that.
They've moved up their timetable for selling cars in the United States, while rival China car entrepreneur Malcolm Bricklin, I remember reading about him in Inc. magazine, he's kind of a wacko. Well, I shouldn't say that. But
Not when you read about him in Billionaire Quarterly. He's not.
Well, no, this is another guy who's got a dream. It's like a DeLorean kind of a dream, though. And I'm not sure he can actually finish his ambitious plan. And by the way, the Geely is different from the Chery, Joe. Did you know that?
I knew there was two different models.
There's two different guys. Malcolm Bricklin is the whacked-out entrepreneur who gets a lot of press, who's working with Chinese automaker Chery, which would sound like Chevy if a Chinese person said it. Here it is, the pronunciation. Geely.
Okay.
Man, you don't want to be named after that movie.
Yeah. Do they know what a poo sandwich that was?
No. Geely now plans to put out a compact sedan and a sports car, so it is a different company, on sale in the United States in the fall of 2008. Folks, that is not far away.
Less than 2 years from now, they'll be out there.
No. It's 2.5 years.
Fall of 2008, Joe, that's 2.5 years.
This is 2006, so a year from now would be 2007.
2 years from now would be 2008. Mm-hmm. 2.5 years from now would be the fall of 2008.
Oh, man, let's ask Emily to help you with that, okay?
It's a good thing you have at least 2.5 toes, because we could help you further if it needed to be.
No, it's all right. We've spent enough time on that.
Lance is in Silverdale. I'm just curious, folks, if there's a $10,000 car built in China, looking stylish, will you buy it? Lance.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Casey. You know, I've supplemented some tools in my garage. You know, the Chinese tools, you get them at those little sales at the, Tacoma Dome or whatever they are. And, man, they are junk. And I can't even imagine driving a car from China. I mean, that's creepy. You know, what about safety?
According
what about the wheel stand on?
You are what an American.
Well, wait a minute. You went to one of those we'll sell you junk things and bought junk.
Well, junk.
And therefore you
China.
Assume that everything from that country of origin, everything else is also junk. Isn't that
hard to categorize everything? You know, I don't want to be, you know, general. But
I mean, there's some damn good fortune cookies come out of that country.
Famous. Full of paper every time.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying that you got suckered in. I've seen those things where they bring you all down for, you know, buy stuff at unbelievably low prices.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are unbelievably low, and they do serve their purpose, you know, for a one-time, maybe two-time use, which is why I get them. You know, I knew what I was getting, but yet I can't imagine my, you know, it having four wheels.
You assume these cars will be sold. Come down to Kingdome Sunday.
Come down to our super sale, Kingdome cars!
Quick, before Kingdome collapse.
Well, you know, Lance makes a good point in that a tool from China is made of forged metal, whether it be a wrench or a socket or whatever, and that metal probably broke on you first, second time you tried to use it. You know, you're stamping an engine block out of forged metal in China. Is it going to have the same?
No, because first off, it's not. The tools were made to be made extremely cheaply. I will give you this. I'll grant you this, Lance. You're making an important point. You do kind of get what you pay for. It's not going to be a $20,000 car for $10,000. It's going to be a $10,000 car.
Yeah.
And with a discerning American car buying public, who's snubbing our own American automakers because Toyota seems to make a more reliable product, mm-hmm. and various other foreign auto manufacturers,
right.
If this car isn't reliable, if it isn't as reliable as, say, other low-cost options like a Saturn,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be DOA. You have a point there.
Now, they say it will be reliable. They say the reason it's cheap is two things. One, ultra-modern manufacturing facilities. They're just now building their assembly lines, so they're building the latest and greatest.
Right.
And number two, dirt cheap labor. You know, you're buying a cheap car off the sweat of some guys working for practically nothing.
Who are happy to have the gig by what they've been used to, so it's not like they're keeping down the good people of China. They're actually giving them an opportunity they've never had before. But from an automaker from Detroit, a guy who's making 20-something, if not more, an hour, with full union benefits to take care of his family, you know, that guy, you can't make a car like this in Detroit for less than 25. Same
well,
car.
Lance, if it turns out it's a great value for the money, would you buy it?
No.
Because?
Are you kidding? My wife won't let me have that. She drives a German car, you know, kind of like Casey and her, you know, spoiled little. No, just
hey.
Casey.
Hey. His wife's a hot little spoiled tart, just like you.
Yeah, right. Good man, Lance.
Yeah. And Casey, by the way, I did meet you last week, and you are very beautiful. I don't think you're spoiled.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Wow.
But no, I probably would not. I drive American trucks, and she drives a German car.
Thank you, Lance. Here's Rusty in Spanaway. Rusty.
All right.
Rusty, the rest of you have been listening to the story. If you just tuned in, the Chinese automobile has been debuted. It doesn't go on sale just yet. The Geely 7151 CK compact sedan. It looks incredibly rich, and it's on our website. If you want to see it right now, go to bobrivers.com and then call. It's going to be $10,000, a Chinese car. Would you buy it, Rusty?
I doubt it. I mean, all of the manufacturers of cars are coming up with what they call disposable automobiles. I went to a bearing seminar 10 years ago that the guy that was giving the seminar was explaining how the bearings are put together and all this stuff, and he was saying that even the American auto manufacturers are coming out with, like, you used to be able to buy wheel bearings for your car, and in the future you're going to buy a wheel hub. That already has the bearings and stuff in it. It's going to cost more, but the bearings will live longer because they're sealed.
In other words, you're saying there are. I don't know why you call
disposable car.
I don't know why you're calling them.
These cars are probably not going to be something that you can buy parts for very readily.
Huh?
I just wouldn't buy one. I've had some opportunities to use some Chinese equipment in the industrial arena, and it doesn't cut the mustard.
I've got a walk at home. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I got this game
like
of checkers. I bought from
them. Breaking down on you. You got to push it down the street. You know.
Something about
it just doesn't feel good to me.
Uh-huh.
You went to a ball bearing seminar or something? Nothing but ball bearings.
Yeah.
I missed
that. Well, ball bearings, spherical bearings, all of that stuff.
Man.
I'm in industrial maintenance, so it's kind of in that field.
Tool your trade, yeah.
And his name is Rusty.
Rusty the bearing guy.
Rusty, thank you. Would you buy a Chinese car? The Geely 7151CK is a compact sedan. It's on exhibit at the North American International Auto Show. It's the first time a Chinese car bound for the United States of America distribution has been displayed. Dealers are snatching up the territory. It's going to be a refined, renamed version of this particular car on display, but that's the basic idea. Expected to sell in the neighborhood of $10,000. How can they do it? Well, inexpensive Chinese labor is, of course, a huge part of it.
So is modern production.
They also claim modern production facilities. They're not retrofitting old production lines. They built the line specifically for this car. And that can result in some big savings, too. Would you buy the Chinese car? Yes or no, and why? Dave.
Good morning. Well, like I was telling your the guy I picked up first, it's looks like a nice car and all that, but how the parts will be able to get, how reliable is it, and all that good stuff. And also the thing is, I know it's a global economy, but how many people are going to put out of work over here in the United States because you went outside and got something cheap?
Right. So you'd prefer for Chinese people to stay, to continue making whatever 50 cents an hour that it is, so that some guy in Detroit can have a third garage?
No, it's not that. It's just that, there's sometimes being too much.
Hold on. I'm just saying you're one of those people that thinks that we should buy American. We've done this topic many times on the show. You're one of those people who doesn't care about people in the other parts of the world. If they're far enough away from you, they don't matter as much.
No, I don't say I don't care. I do care. But, I've always driven a Chevy, and, that's just me.
Okay, but that's... Look, I'm not saying you're terrible for thinking that way. Lots of people think that way. But admit it.
Own it.
Well, you go into an extreme there, Bob. Because...
That's what I do.
Yes, you do very well.
There's an American bicycle that most every one of us either own or have owned sometimes in our life called a Huffy.
Sure, called a Schwab.
No, a Huffy. You know what a Huffy is, right?
I don't know what a Huffy is.
It's a very, very popular brand of pedaled bicycle. Made in China. Made in China, has been for a long time, the Huffy. The workers at the Huffy factory work an average of 13 to 15 hours a day. They work an average of 90 hours a week at the Huffy factory. Mm. One thing you're doing at the Huffy factory is huffing paint. They have poor ventilation at the Huffy factory. If you skip work, you're fined 2 days' pay. If you fail to work overtime, if you refuse to work overtime with no overtime premium on your pay, you're fined 2 days' pay at the Huffy plant.
At the Huffy.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. They're in China. Who cares?
That's what they use.
That bike's cheap.
The bike is cheap. Yeah. So you think it'll put Americans out of work, so you won't buy it?
No, I'm not saying it'll put Americans out of work immediately, but, if people are going to go for the cheaper cars that, build out of country, then, somebody's going to lose their job because somebody, they don't need them anymore.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Nate in Mill Creek, go ahead.
Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know that it would be something that I would buy. More or less a consideration of whether or not it would be something you'd buy for the kids. But I think for the first 2 or 3 years, I wouldn't want to. For I want to see how reliable it is first, and also, if you remember back in the '60s when we felt the same way about Toyota, maybe 20 years from now we'll be buying Chinese cars because they'll be the most reliable car out there.
That's what I'm worried about, is that we don't keep up. What are these new manufacturing technologies? And should we, we should be thinking about it not like, let's not buy them because it'll put Americans out of work. Instead, we should say, what are they doing right?
We all shop at Walmart because they give us a better deal for the dollar.
All right. And I agree with you. Waiting a few years on any new... technology is, let someone else be the guinea pig. That probably makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nate. Jim is in Olympia. Jim.
Yeah, hi, Bob, Spike, Joe.
Hey.
Casey, how you doing?
Hey. All right.
Good.
Yo, Jim.
Yes.
You're on.
Okay. Yeah, I would buy, well, I'd at least look at the car. I haven't seen it on your website because I was driving to work, but I've got relatives in China and actually have an uncle that exports cars to Japan, and he has a nice luxury sedan that I've ridden in. And I've ridden in a lot of different types of vehicles in China, some I would not buy, but I'd at least take a look at it.
At least take a look at it. Some of their cars are okay.
Oh, yeah. He's got a really nice sedan, leather seats.
It's not like the Chinese never made cars before. This is a good point, right? It's not like they were sitting around the American flag factory one day thinking,
dang! It was all rickshaws until now.
What could we make? How about let's make something that doesn't have handles on it, right, that we have to carry the person in? You know, they've had cars.
I've seen a lot of car rejects over there, and I've ridden in some of them. All so, right. You know, I have something to compare it by.
All right. Thank you very much. Here's Kevin and Everett. Kevin?
Hey, Bob, Spike, and Joe. How's it going this morning?
Good, sir.
I've owned everything from Daewoos to Yugos. I've ridden Russian bikes and even the Chinese Changshin bike. And usually everything stands up really well until you have a catastrophic failure, and then you're just out of luck. It flattens out the valves or something, and it's just not worth fixing.
So you have a mistrust of the foreign manufacturing process.
Well, you couldn't tell it by the fact that I've owned a bunch of them.
So you want to know back. You want to know how they do in a crash, right?
Oh, well, actually, my wife in the Daewoo got rear-ended about a year ago, and for $400, we put it back on the road, and it handled the crash really well.
Really?
Yeah. And the Yugo we had, the timing belt went, and we smashed all the valves. That wasn't worth fixing. And my Russian Ural motorcycle with the hack, we drove that, but boy, it was a lot of maintenance.
Thank you, Kevin.
They should drive a bunch of these Geelys into the wall. They got a big wall. Yeah. Crash test them a bunch and see how they hold up.
China? Yeah. I think Kevin's point is that here, when something goes wrong with your car, the guy at the repair shop goes, oh, yeah, I've seen that. That always happens at 70,000 miles on that particular brand of Chevy, and the guy knows exactly what it is.
Right.
And 500 lawyers sued the company for that, and there was a recall,
yep.
And they give it right back to you. And it's going to take a while for that to develop with China. James Franco, the Golden Globe Award-winning actor, you know from his portrayal of James Dean, as well as the Spider-Man movies, where he stars as Peter Parker's best buddy, Harry Osborn, and his breakthrough role on Freaks and Geeks. James Franco is now starring in a new film that sounds like something both the husband and wife can enjoy on date night. It's Tristan and Isolde. Did I get it right? Close? Isolde, sorry. Tristan and Isolde. That's my only problem with this movie. It sounds like a lot of fun. James portrays England's greatest medieval knight, Tristan, and Sophie Miles stars as the lovely Irish maiden he falls in love with, Isolde. Tristan and Isolde opens nationwide today. James Franco, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Hey, great, thanks.
All right. This movie takes place in a medieval time. What did you know about medieval times before you actually started working on this movie, and how did you get ready for it?
I guess I didn't know much, beyond the story that I read as a kid. And so, but I had a lot of time on my hands. I had about 8 months, so every day we'd train with swords and horseback ride, and I had to work on an accent. And so, we shot in Ireland and Prague, and guess what I found out about the time is it's definitely dirty.
Dirty.
Dirty work.
The laundry was just not done that well. And Ireland, of course, there's gonna be some beautiful scenery, I would imagine. Was it a spectacular place to work?
Yeah, we filmed in an area called Connemara on the west coast, and I mean, if there's anywhere that fairies live on the earth, it's there. I mean, it was really magical
place.
Which it was pretty cold and pretty hard to do romantic scenes out in
It's shrinkage, okay? It's cold. It's wet. Come on.
Well, no, it's cold. You're talking. You know we're in Seattle, right? It's cold and wet.
We can
relate, man.
Yeah, we're on our, 25th day of rain in a row? My wife wants me to take her to Ireland. It's been a repeating theme for years and years, and I haven't gone because I feel like I'm already there. But it's not a place you'd go back to. You're going to be seen on some Caribbean island, right?
No, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's just, I wouldn't take your wife in the winter and go for any swim.
Now, you are, in this movie, I understand you are wounded and left for dead.
Yeah, I play, the knight, and I'm wounded in battle and left for dead, and I end up on the shore of a princess's home, and she takes me in, heals me back to health, and we fall in love, and then I have to go back home, and I think I'm going to go back and see her. Unfortunately, she turns out to be the princess, and she's to be married to my king.
Yeah.
So, love triangle.
I imagine that's a little risky for you too. Not a lot of get some extra health insurance at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard on poor Tristan.
What did you find more difficult about this movie, learning to ride a horse or learning to talk in a fake English medieval accent?
The one was harder, but I thought there'd be more scrutiny of the accent. There's a prejudice against American actors doing British accents, so I worked out as hard as I could, and if anyone has any fault with it, I guess there's nothing more I could do. I worked out every day. And,
yeah. We're not complaining, dude. We're okay.
No, I know. Nobody can bust you on saying it's bad. I mean, this is back in the ancient times.
Yeah, who knows what they talked like then, you know?
They definitely didn't talk like we were...
Yeah, and that's interesting because there is that prejudice. I've seen that before, and yet there are so many British or Australian actors and actresses who can come over here and say "hot dog" and no one gives them any grief.
Yeah, well, exactly. I don't know. I mean, it is part of their training. It's just, you know, everybody does American movies. A lot of them are really good at American accents, but American actors just aren't called to do the reverse as often.
Hey, James, if I may, I'd like to ask you about the Spider-Man series, because your role in that looks like it's about to blow up and be huge. At the end of 2, which I thought was probably one of the greatest sequels ever made, Spider-Man 2, you guys really got it nailed. But in 3, it looks like, if I guess correctly, that the son of the Green Goblin is going to have a major role coming up.
Well, it's the number one question I've been asked. I'm actually on the set right now for my first day of filming.
He's on the set for Spider-Man 3 as we speak.
And
he's going to give us
nothing.
I can't
say much. That's fine.
That's fine. You've said volumes, buddy,
right there. I can't say much. I die in the first 3 minutes. I'll be done this afternoon at 3. James Franco.
My first and only day.
On the set of Spider-Man 3 right now. James, good luck with this movie, Tristan and Isolde. It opens today nationwide. It's nice to meet you.
Great. Thanks, guys.
102.5.